Here we go.
Welcome to Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down the news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb,
and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse.
Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated. So a quick recap, he basically considers games that are online only and have their servers shut down to be destroyed. He thinks that's not okay because they're taking away a product that you paid for. And he's now begun a worldwide campaign to prevent that. So go on, DJ.
I was going to say, it's a bit ambitious with this plan.
It is, but as he said in a previous video, his plan is to either make it happen or to fail spectacularly to get it settled law so that we either know where we stand and whether games actually have consumer protections or not. So the key game behind this is The Crew by Ubisoft, which, because France is in the EU and has considerable consumer protections, makes it a particularly good method to a particularly good place to take this fight. He's already said that he's spoken to lawyers in the US, and in the US there's basically no leg to stand on, but that he hopes that bringing in this sort of law in other countries would result in the US following suit, or for game developers to not actually produce two separate copies of their games for the US and rest of the world. So the battle plan: on his website, stopkillinggames.com, you can select your country of residence, and it will have a list of priorities from high to low on how you can help this battle. So looking at the Australia page, the highest priority is contacting the ACCC, the Consumer Protection Watchdog in Australia, which requires you to own a copy of The Crew. So by contacting Ubisoft and getting proof that you've contacted them, you can then report a consumer issue to the ACCC with Ubisoft's details and that you bought The Crew, they've removed support, that in this case he's citing the undisturbed possession laws, and that we'd like Ubisoft to fix the game so that we can continue playing without their support.
I liked how in the highest priority, there's a step-by-step process to this.
Yeah, it's really detailed. And he's got this up for half a dozen countries. Sorry, 8 countries now. And the rest of the world can take part too by contacting the DGCCRF, which is a French body. I believe it's the French consumer protection body.
It's the... the DGCCRF. Also known as the Directorate General for Competition Policy, Consumer Affairs, and Fraud Control. It is a Ministry of the Economy and has the mandate to focus on three focus areas: regulation of market competition, economic protection of consumers and consumer safe protection of consumers, and consumer safety. Though it's a French, it's linked to French law, essentially.
Okay, so if you don't own The Crew and you live in Australia, you can sign the petition, which has been submitted to the Australian government and hasn't opened yet, but will be opening in the next couple of weeks in late April. I'll be reminding you that it's happened, so keep an eye here as well. And once that opens, we have 4 weeks to get as many people as possible who live in Australia to make a complaint and sign the petition.
I've seen a couple of YouTube content creators stepping up to this as well. But recently, Some Ordinary Gamers, for example, they did a video about this, and they want to support Ross's actions in this lawsuit.
Yeah, that's the key here, because Ross only has a few hundred thousand subscribers on YouTube, and we really need to get the word out to as many people as possible.
So from your perspective, how likely do you reckon we'll see a likely victory in this entire thing, or...
I think we've got a good chance in Australia of seeing some positive come out of this.
And what's going to be interesting is the fact that if this, let's say if this becomes successful, this will put, are we going to see a resurgence of physical media ownership, especially with games?
I think that's past.
You think
it's hard to find physical copies of a lot of games these days. The time for that would have been 10 or 15 years ago. These days, you're lucky to get a physical release for some games. There's a whole company based around limited run physical releases called Limited Run Games. And their whole thing is that they create boxes and cartridges and discs for games that are only available online. But by far, the vast majority of games are only available online these days. And even if you do get a disc, you're also relying on servers anyway, because a lot of games are released without day one patches. So when the game is released, they'll also release a massive patch that will fix all the bugs that were reported between the time the game was written to the disc and the time it was actually released.
Have you seen this level of commitment done anywhere else in your lifetime? Or this is the first time?
Yeah, I've absolutely seen other groups have even bigger protests. But this is the biggest thing I've ever seen for games, as far as I can recall.
What's going to be also interesting is that gaming right now is at a, I wouldn't say crossroads, but in a very interesting position. Like when you see when you see gaming companies now just going through huge layoffs, for example, and then you've seen stuff like this going around with how we want to save the old games and games companies are just becoming too greedy. It's good. It's a very interesting position, per se.
It is.
But that's also going to be another. Here's another question: If let's say physical media comes back, okay, does a huge comeback, as I said earlier, are we going to see jobs being saved in this process, or it's still gonna, the job losses are still gonna be a thing?
No, I don't think it would save any jobs.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. I hope Ross does well with this lawsuit. And what I think will happen is if Ross gets the lawsuit through, can you imagine other YouTubers doing this level of work in terms of other areas of like gaming or movies, for example?
I'd like to see it. I'd like more people to really care about what's going on and put in the effort. But Ross has basically said that the only reason he's doing this is because nobody else has. He's been waiting years and nothing's happened, so he's taken it into his own hands.
Yeah, but the problem is with there's one criticism I have with Ross's initiative is the fact that it's basing on a game, The Crew. That's the only. I'm like, why? Why the crew of all games?
It's not about The Crew. It's about France.
Yeah, I understand.
There were
that.
12 million people who bought The Crew.
Yeah.
Or who played it. They did give it away for free for a little bit. But of 12 million people who played it, there are still a number who want to play it. The Ubisoft is based in France, which has strong consumer protection laws. So it's an easier fight than having to go against an American company. And it's just a big game to have been destroyed.
Yeah.
And in a way that means that there's no way for anyone to preserve it. Other games that get shut down often have a single-player component or will be cracked, but The Crew is in no way able to be cracked because it's server-based. So it is entirely extinct as of the 1st of April.
Ah, oh, damn. So, because I've seen a couple of videos, they also said that The Crew is also can be termed as a live service game. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, live service games, they tend to have a limited lifespan, don't they?
That's what this is about. The live service games have a limited lifespan, but they don't tell you how long that lifespan's going to be.
Hmm.
It could be 6 months from the date of purchase. It could be a year, could be 2 years, could be 10 years. But when you buy the game, you're not buying this product that you know will be, well, you know it will be destroyed in X number of years. You don't know when, but they're still selling it as if you're going to get a full game that you get to keep forever. They're not saying this is a temporary purchase. They're saying this is a permanent purchase. But yeah, because it relies on the component that they can shut down, they can take it away from you. It's like if you bought a car and after going on a drive for some amount of time, somebody comes along from the dealership and takes the car off you.
Yeah, that's not a pretty sight. Yeah, that's not good.
Not a repossession or anything. You've paid up, but they just take it off you without any recourse for you.
Or any reason. That's the crazy part about this. Like they can do this willy-nilly and don't give a reason for it. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, usually the excuse is something about servers and server costs, but the goal behind this is to try to get the companies to release games in a way that they're not dependent on servers, or at the very least, when the server is shut down, release a copy of the server so that everyone can continue playing.
How do you think this case will affect the future of live service gaming in the long run?
I think it might actually might turn the clock back a decade or so, back to when we could have our own private servers of games. In my ideal world, when this goes through, well, if it goes through, which I'm really hoping it does, we'd go back to the way things were 10 or 15 years ago. You can download a server executable and run your own server. Sure, no one will, you might end up with nobody ever playing with you, but they might, you might start a community and host your own community servers where you have your own community built up, and that's an opportunity to create friendships and relationships that is a lot harder to do with live service games because the servers aren't persistent in that way.
Yeah, but don't...
So that's something that we've lost going from the way things were to live service games.
Yeah, but the only game I can think of that does that is Minecraft, and that's... okay, this may sound stupid, but would you class Minecraft as a live service game?
No, but Microsoft wish it was.
Yeah, but Minecraft has that whole idea of, okay, you can have private servers as well.
Yeah, and you can also buy a server from Microsoft if you want. Well, rent a server.
Okay.
But if you want, you can go and download the server files and run your own server. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. And I'm sure Microsoft would love for it to be the other way around, where you have to rent a server from them. But I think they also recognize that if they did that, they would face the biggest thing of any company anywhere. And they just don't have the will to do that.
Oh, come on. This is Microsoft we're talking about. Bill Gates has enough million just to cover it.
Well, Bill Gates has nothing to do with Microsoft, and he hasn't for like 15 years, so...
Ah, oh, God damn it. Yeah, but they're a multi-billion dollar company, though, in essence. I mean, like, wouldn't Microsoft having, like, private servers and people playing their games be a good thing for them in terms of from a business perspective? Like, yeah, cool, but people are buying our games and playing them on our servers. It's a win-win.
Yeah, I don't get what you're saying.
Of course,
they want people playing on their own on rented servers.
I mean, but you're making it sound like it's a bad thing at the same time.
It is, because if Microsoft shuts down the servers in a year or 2 years or 10 years, they're gone forever. But because we can download the server files and run our own servers, Minecraft is saved from being lost.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the downside to this whole lawsuit is going to be as well the statute of limitations as well, if there is one.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I think it wouldn't apply there because even though the game has been out for a few years now, it's been supported up until less than a week ago. So I don't see why there would be any statute of limitations on this case.
That's true. What's the rest of the What's the rest of the gaming circles have been saying about this case, though?
I'm not actually sure. I haven't been following much outside of Ross's videos.
That's fair.
So I'm not entirely aware how the media is reacting to it. I have seen it pop up in a lot of headlines that have just sort of skimmed past because I haven't had time. But I can't imagine anyone being against this except for the big companies.
See, I'm looking at one of the websites, Game World Observer, an article by Evgeny Obedkov, and it's talking about, the rationale, for example, saying while video games are primarily just for entertainment and not much consequence, the practice of a seller destroying a product someone has already paid for represents a radical assault on consumer rights and the concept of ownership itself. If this practice is not stopped, it will be codified to law and spread to products of more importance over time, such as agricultural equipment, educational products, medical devices, etc. It is important that consumers maintain a basic level of rights so as to not be overrun by predatory practices. Additionally, video games are creative works. The concept of destroying existing copies of a song, film, book, etc. would be considered as a cultural loss for society. While a less recognized medium, video games still deserve the basic protections against the complete and willful destruction of its works.
Exactly. No one would say this was okay for music or for movies. Well, they're trying to. So this doesn't just affect games. Whatever happens here is likely going to affect movies and music and all sorts of different
mediums.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sort of seeing that. Remember when GTA did the whole remaster and how shit that turned out to be?
Yeah, they'd lost the licenses for some of the music, so they just took it out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of...
And they took away the original releases, so you can't buy them anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's already begun in terms of the whole seller destroying the product.
But that's still video games. I'm talking about, like, they can't come and take your music off you if you buy a CD. It's only games where we accept that this is something that companies can do. And this ties into our next topic, but a few months ago, Warner Brothers Discovery tried to take away shows that people had paid for on online stores. And there was a huge thing about that. And I think they backed down.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be a big deal for the multiple industries, because if they can show the music industry and movie industry that this isn't okay, they'll stop trying things like that.
Okay, but here's another question for you though. Okay, what if we've seen this happened with the movie industry in terms of, let's say, for example, I don't know whether you remember this, but this was during 2020 or 2019, where a couple of movies decided to be edited by the studio studios for saying, oh, because of the problematic nature of this original movie, we're going to edit it. And you edit the movie and it's like, oh, what the hell, man?
That's like, something different.
Really?
They can't take the original copy of Gone with the Wind out of your hands.
They can't, but they could edit it out, and then you go like, okay, I have the original copy, but then you'd be like, I can't convert it into, say, a Blu-ray or something like that, for example. You get what I mean?
That's always been true. And you can convert a physical copy of you can convert videotape to DVD, DVD to Blu-ray. It's even easier now that everything's digital. So I don't get what your point is there.
My point is that even though we have the physical, copy and it's degraded. Is that the word, degraded?
No, degraded would be the word you're looking for.
Thank you. And it's degraded thanks to the passage of time. And if we want to play again, play the new version of, play the same game but in a digital format, for example, and then, like, let's say next year they decide, if something tragic happens, that their game company that made the upgraded version of the game that you bought years ago said, okay, due to the problematic natures of what happened outside the real world, we're going to edit parts of this game that you love.
Yeah, and they still can't come and take the original copy out of your hands.
Yeah, I guess so.
But they can do that with games.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine in the next in the next Final Fantasy game, in the if they do Final Fantasy remake, the number 7 again, and they totally censor out Aerith's death to someone else, for example.
That would be nonsensical. Anyway, we should be moving it along to our next topic, which I tried to segue to, and then we kept talking. Funimation, yeah. The anime streaming site, has shut down.
Ah, yes. On the April 2nd, 2024, it shut down. The studio, the dubbing studio, well, originally it was an anime distributor, then it turned to a dubbing studio, then it turned to a streaming service, has shut down its app, and all of its website has been redirected to Crunchyroll, effectively ending its services once and for all.
So they got bought out. But why is this a problem?
It's a problem because because Funimation, the home of anime, a lot of its animes have lost a home, essentially. It's, when I say a lot, I mean 190 plus.
And that includes anime that people have paid for, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you can pay for an anime on Funimation. Like, they only announced this a month ago, I think.
Yeah, yep.
So you could buy anime on Funimation in the last couple of months, and now you can't watch it on Crunchyroll, even though Crunchyroll bought Funimation.
Yeah.
They do claim that everything will be coming across eventually.
Hmm.
But that hasn't happened yet, so we'll have to see if we can trust them.
Someone has made a list of all the anime content that has not been moved to Crunchyroll, and I'll put the link up on the show notes here, but it's one hell of a Google Doc, so it's been categorized as some live-action shows are also involved in this as well. Some shows that are dubbed but don't have the sub license, and some they don't have the sub on not on streaming, but it's just dub only. And there are some interesting ones, like, for example, live action Rurouni Kenshin movies, dub and sub. That's not in there. Astro Boy, Aria the Animation, Angel Link, sub only through DC. Angel Beats, which has a sub license. What else? I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether you know all these animes, Professor.
No, I don't.
Ah,
you weeb.
Yes, I know. I'm a weeb. Yes, I know. It's a life. It's a life. But yeah, it's sad to see Funimation go. I mean, they've been doing this for 30 years, and they were the home of bringing anime to the West, and they're really, really famous because they were the ones that brought the Dragon Ball franchise into the West. And here's an interesting thing. A statement was originally published this year on Funimation's website, which is now Crunchyroll. It says, as part of Crunchyroll's unification of fan services in March 2002, the Funimation app and website will be closed in April 2nd, 2024. Rest assured, this transition will not impact your access to the vast library of anime available on Crunchyroll. We remain committed to delivering the best anime streaming experience, and will continue to expand our offerings to cater to your diverse interests. How do you think this is? You've got a Funimation. You had a Funimation membership, didn't you? Once upon a time,
I did. I still do. I've actually been meaning to cancel it for unrelated reasons. Mostly because I never use it.
How do you find the Funimation app in general, like from a user's perspective?
I don't know. I didn't use the app.
You didn't use it? Ah, damn it.
No, I used the website.
Was it good?
And it wasn't too bad.
Yeah?
But then I am a geek, so if you ask my mum to figure it out, it might have been harder.
Oh. Yeah, because I have a couple of interesting questions to ask, though. Like, how would this benefit Crunchyroll and be now that it's swallowed up Funimation? And I think this will make Crunchyroll the next big. It'll be the next It'd be the anime version of Netflix at this point.
Yeah, that's the design, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the design. I mean, the Crunchyroll has a couple of its own productions. Although some were more ill-fated than others, like the infamous High Guardian Spice show, for example. Oh boy, that was a mess. But ever since Funimation has disappeared, a lot of people have kind of decided to go, oh, I miss Funimation now. For example, someone wrote here saying, it cannot be overstated how perverse the Funimation brand was in North America for its last decade.
I'm hoping you mean pervasive.
Oh, yep, sorry. Pervasive.
Those are two very different words there.
No matter where you watch the myriad licensed titles, every episode begins with the acknowledgement that you should be watching and slick visuals. That kind of thing sticks. The end of an era, with Funimation being officially sunset, we celebrate and look back at one of our earliest ads promoting the new, at the time, English dub of One Piece in 2007, highlighting several of the Straw Hats VAs. And someone even did a tweet on the various Funimation logo changes throughout the years, which I think is very nice. But the one question I do have to ask, though, with this transition, I know you don't really watch anime and stuff, but streaming services doing this sort of mergers and whatnot, do you always worry about the quality of the product at the end? Like, for example, when Netflix became the it streaming service, for example, do you see the quality of the shows improve or degrade over time?
I don't know, because I was fairly late to Netflix.
Yeah, because I googled a question on Quora on Google, actually, and I just asked, how will the merger between Crunchyroll and Animation affect consumers? Someone wrote this. Now, if you ask me, people are being overly dramatic about it, but it's not like I don't see why they feel that way. To me, I don't think this will necessarily make anime streaming any better, and I'm not sure if their intentions is to even bring that about based on history. Sony is the leading ship now, and it's a Japanese company, so that's why it's more likely than not. But who's to say, really? It'll be a Sony division in the West running the ship. I'm pretty sure about this. It depends on how greedy they become now that they literally own anime in the market. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, these guys are irrelevant in the anime streaming space compared to Crunchyroll and Funimation. This will be more true now that Sony owns them both. And if they make the wrong moves, piracy will now be even more attractive. Oh, that'll be an interesting. That'll be interesting. Imagine how will piracy be affected by this? Because I think, if I recall, Crunchyroll memberships are not that cheap.
Yeah, they've just put the price up quite a bit.
Really? How bad?
Let me pull up the email. Let's see. So the email they sent me back in February saying that they were moving to Crunchyroll doesn't actually say. I thought it said that they were going to increase the price. So I could be wrong about that.
Hang on a second. Maybe I could check it on the Crunchyroll site. Maybe they could say how much it is. Compare all the plans. There we go. So here is the plan. So as a fan, you get, this is Australian dollars, by the way, to all our listeners. So you get $10.99 per month as a fan. As a mega fan, you get $13.99 per month, and that's a mega fan. And the other mega fan, it is $139.99 per year. Well, it's the same mega fan. Although the only benefit you get with the mega fan is you stream up to 4 devices at a time, offline viewing, access to Crunchyroll Game Vault, a catalog of few games, and this is for the yearly payment, 16% discount on monthly plan, billed every 12 months.
Yeah, it's fairly common to give a discount for signing up for a longer period.
But $13.99 per month, that's not,
not too bad.
Yeah.
Not as bad as I was thinking it was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you compare that to like a Netflix plan, I think it'll be, it's cheaper.
I think so, but I'm not sure.
Hold on a second. And Netflix. Okay, so for Netflix, your premium plan, this is Australian prices, by the way, $22.99 Australian. Your standard, this is the $16.99 for your standard, and standard with ads, $6.99 with ads.
Okay, so if you, yeah, if you don't want ads, it sounds like they're about the same price.
Hmm. But given the given these prices and how much of an extensive library Crunchyroll is going to have, do you reckon piracy is going to be bigger or smaller?
I think we're seeing a bit of a resurgence in piracy. I can't really say why that is, though.
Yeah.
It could be the prices of everything going up, so people are more willing to pirate.
Yeah.
It could be that it's less convenient to have a subscription now because you have to have subscriptions to 6 different places to see everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also because of Crunchyroll's recent history, which I don't want to delve into too much, but yeah, they have a history. They have a bit of a spotty history. Well, Funimation has a spotty history, but yeah, that'll be a bit chat for another time, as we'll be going out of this world with anime to a new frontier.
Terrible segue.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yes, I know.
So the White House has asked NASA to develop a time zone for the moon. NASA's decided to call this Coordinated Lunar Time, or LTC, which is important for a few reasons, but one of which being that time moves quicker on the moon than on Earth.
Uh-huh.
58.7 microseconds quicker every day.
Oh, that's not much.
Yeah, but apparently that causes issues trying to synchronize your spacecraft. In 50 years, that's a 1 second gap.
Okay. I mean, can you imagine being a pizza delivery guy and you're delivering pizza to the moon? And you go, okay, I'm here. It's like, you're 1 second late. Why? You're like, the launch was pretty...
If your pizza takes 50 years to get to you, you've got bigger issues.
I mean, the other problem with a lunar time zone would be the fact that, okay, we still haven't made the moon habitable yet. So why make a time zone?
For the robots.
Ah, great. This is like the Matrix all over again.
Well, it turns out squishy meat sacks are really bad at exploring space, but robots, really good. There was a really good book I read recently, actually, about robots on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It was Daniel Suarez's Critical Mass, the sequel to Delta V, which is about asteroid miners. I recommend reading Delta V first because it sets up everything for Critical Mass. It's a direct sequel.
Okay.
But one issue with having different time zones, depending on which team you accounting with, is that it would cause you computer issues when you try to synchronize data between various computers, various robots, and spacecraft. And when things come down to fractions of a second for, like, cluster burns, you don't want to be introducing any uncertainty.
I'm just thinking, imagine in years from now, we're playing, people are playing League of Legends still, and the lag gets so bad, it's like, oh, you're going to face a 1 second delay.
Yeah, we still haven't solved faster than light communications, which we're going to have to do for video gaming in space. So we'll probably see technological segregation between the internet of Earth and Moon, or Earth and Mars.
This reminds me of an anime series. I don't know whether you're familiar with this. It's called Older Noah Zero, where it's basically humans in Mars have started to become very snooty of the humans on Earth. So the humans of Mars have decided, you know what? We're going to destroy the hell out of you, Earthlings.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's going to be interesting. Imagine the other question is going to be with this level, this time zone would be how would the body react to time changes? I mean, it's tough enough for people to try and adapt to it through sleep. When you're going from, like, let's say from Australia to North America, for example.
Oh, right. So traditionally, I think the ISS runs on Greenwich Mean Time or Universal Time, Coordinated Time. So what you'll find is they run their clocks based on a particular time zone on Earth, even though the ISS crosses the Earth in, I think, 45 minutes to make an orbit. That sounds a bit quick, actually. Okay, so it only does 16 orbits per day, so 45 minutes is pretty quite a bit quicker than the actual speed. Hmm. But anyway, my point is that it goes around the Earth multiple times per day, so you're not going to adjust your time to wake up and go to bed and wake up and go to bed 16 times per day. That would be stupid.
Oh, damn. I mean, if that's stupid in the ISS, imagine how many times you have to wake up and get to bed every time and on the moon. That'd be even worse.
Because one orbit of the Earth for the moon is about 28 days, which is where we get the lunar month from.
Yeah.
So you synchronize your time with somewhere on the ground and then get up and when they get up, even if you're not anywhere near them.
what's even going to be fun is, can you imagine the moon becomes the next Earth, as in a habitable place to live? Can you imagine you were born on the moon and they go, okay, what's the what's the time of birth for this baby? Converting moon time to actual time will be a nightmare.
Yeah. Like, that's one of the things that this might help solve.
Yeah.
Because even though it's not synchronized with the moon's orbit, so it's a single time zone for the entire body, it would help you give a more precise time that the child was born. So, yeah, that would be an interesting question, though. How would people live on the moon where a day is 28 Earth days?
Can you imagine school on the moon? Goodbye 8 o'clock, 8:30 till 3 o'clock time schools. It's going to be day one.
Yeah, I feel like people living on the moon would use a 24-hour clock or something close to it.
I guess.
Just like on the ISS, they'd pick a location on Earth to match to and then count from there.
That's true. I'm just reading some of the bits here. They said Artemis 3 will be the first mission to return to the moon's surface since Apollo 17 in 1972. It is set to land at the lunar South Pole, which is thought to hold vast stores of water, ice, and craters that's never seen sunlight.
And I am so hyped for it.
Locating and directing this mission requires extreme precision down to the nanosecond. Errors in navigation could risk spacecraft entering the wrong orbits. But Artemis 3 is also one of the numerous planned national missions onto the moon, as well as private endeavors. If time is not coordinated between them, it could lead to challenges in sending data and communication between spacecraft, satellites, and Earth.
Yeah, so that basically covers everything we've discussed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, for our shout-outs this week, we have the 15th anniversary of Fast and Furious, the most confusing movie franchise name ever. Not to be confused with The Fast and the Furious, which came out in 2001. This is the fourth Fast and Furious movie, came out in 2009.
Remember, Professor, it's all about the family.
The composer Brian Tyler only had 3 days to record the score for the movie. And on the 4th of April, we also have the anniversary of the first temporary artificial heart from 1969, when Domingo Leota and Denton A. Cooley transplanted a dying man's heart with a mechanical heart at the Texas Heart Institute in Houston. After 64 hours, the man's heart was replaced again with a donor heart. Unfortunately, he died 32 hours after the transplant from an acute pulmonary infection. And you can see the prototype of the artificial heart used in the operation in the Smithsonian Institute's Museum of American History.
I gotta say, that heart looked really cool as a prototype. It does.
Yes, there will be pictures of that in the show notes. And also on the 4th of April, we pass the 10th anniversary of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which the DJ insisted we include because he's not just a weeb, but a Marvel fanboy.
I'm not that big of a Marvel fanboy.
Liar.
Hey, I will say this. Marvel movies, they're just absolute trash. But then they were good. Then they were good. Back then,
they've always been trash.
Yeah, that's subjective. That's subjective. I'll put it that way.
And the DJ has chosen a messed up moment in nerdom for us.
So, you've seen 2001 A Space Odyssey?
I have, and it is an excellent movie.
What was the most disturbing part of that movie for?
Well, it's full of a lot of death, so it's a hard pick between astronauts being launched off into space without a tether, people in their cryopods being killed, or HAL being shut down.
That's the messed up moments in nerddom number 9, HAL's demise, when HAL goes, "I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that."
No, he doesn't. That line... He says that in response to open the pod bay doors. When he's being shut down, he sings Daisy Daisy.
But that line itself, though, that was the most disturbing thing that you could actually imagine at that time. And this is the movie that features murderous apes, imposing alien monolith, and a giant space fetus. But for those who are curious what this line is from, this is from 2001 A Space Odyssey. The computer has gone rogue, which is HAL 9000, and it sets a crew member Frank Poole adrift in the pod and refusing crew member Dr. David Bowman entry upon bringing his colleague's corpse back to the ship. To make matters worse, HAL had just turned off the hibernation system, preserving the lives of the rest of the crew. Fortunately, the last remaining astronaut is able to remotely open the airlock through which he enters the ship and begins to disconnect the computer. "I'm afraid, Dave," a dying HAL says. It's not real violence, but considering that HAL is the most human-like character in the film, it's awfully close. And that scared the hell out of people.
Yeah, they basically slowly lobotomize him. Until at the end, he's returned to a childlike state before they give him the killing blow.
Oh, damn. Have you seen the sequel to this movie, though?
I never have. I've been trying to track it down for years, and I've never gotten around to finding a copy.
For those who are curious, it's the sequel to the to 2001 Space Odyssey is called 2010, the year we make contact. Which, interestingly enough, they brought back HAL. Spoiler alert.
Well, it's another computer that happens to be the same model as HAL.
Really? I thought it was just.
I've read the book.
I've seen the plot here, and they say, "Oh, we're just reactivating HAL."
Okay, maybe the movie was a bit different.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure in the book it was another model of HAL computer.
Okay.
Well, not another model. It's the same model, but a different unit.
Okay. Yeah, but that's the messed up part. HAL sounding so human at the point of death. Ugh, still gives me the chills.
Why don't you just take a chill pill and we can talk this over? And our wacky movie for this week is Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, which premiered in Mexico on the 4th of April 2004. Have you ever seen Sky Captain?
I have seen it a long time ago. That was one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
It is quite weird. It's diesel punk, and it's about a pilot, like a World War II pilot, flying around, landing on flying aircraft carriers, and hunting down a mad scientist who has created a rocket full of dinosaurs. It's also one of the first movies to be in almost entirely CGI with live action laid over the top. So it was heavily inspired by films and comic books from the 30s and 40s.
Curiously, though, with the Sky Captain movie, the whole aesthetic of it, like being all black and white, did it kind of throw you off it a bit?
Yeah, it is quite washed out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think it's black and white. I think it's more sepia.
That I can agree on, yeah.
It's an interesting design choice.
I mean, it's a callback to the old monster movies you would see on black and white. It's a good callback. But man, some of the CGI was just, what the hell are they thinking, guys?
Yeah, the graphics haven't exactly aged well. But I think the story and setting are actually really good.
And plus, they made Angelina Jolie hot in this movie.
What, you reckon she wasn't hot in other movies?
I'm gonna stop myself right there and say,
I'm sure Angelina Jolie would love to know that you don't think she's hot.
Yes.
She probably doesn't care about you. You're nobody.
Oh, give me some bleeding dignity. Okay, I will say this: her costume was really, really hot, though. Her costume was hot.
So you're into a chicken uniform?
Yes, I unashamedly will admit. And I bet you're going to use that as a black man.
I'm going to file it away just in case I need it at some point.
God damn it, Professor. God damn it.
So there's a short film that they made for promoting the movie before they actually made the movie and showed a few minutes of it to Gwyneth Paltrow, who immediately agreed to sign on without a script at an indie wage.
What does that mean, though? Like an indie wage? Like,
they're not paying her for star power.
Ah, okay.
It also features Laurence Olivier in what I, if I remember correctly, is his final role, even though he'd been dead for 13 years.
Laurence Olivier, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, a very famous actor. They did this using archive footage of him.
Because this is before holograms and CGI became too powerful, wasn't it? Or AI.
Yeah, it was an early attempt at what would be a lot more common a few years later. Well, that's all we have for this week. DJ, where can they find us?
They can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and any other audio platforms I can think of right now.
So look after yourselves, stay hydrated, and we'll see you next time.
Stay happy, stay nerdy, have fun.
Well, that's all we have for this week. DJ, where can they find us?
They can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and any other audio platforms I can think of.
So look after yourselves, stay hydrated, and we'll see you next time.
Stay happy, stay nerdy, have fun.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.